Blog Talk Radio.
This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. The first time I tried my hand at fiction, in high school, it was a way of dealing with people and issues that I couldn't handle in real life. So I killed the people off in brutal fashion and made the issues go away. My friends thought it was hysterical and that I was a little twisted. In college, I again used fiction writing for my personal aims, this time to deal with my frustrating inability to get laid as a freshman at the University of Miami. I thought it might be a way of leveling the playing field. It didn't change my virginal status, but as the manuscript was handed around the dormitory, I earned a different kind of reputation. I was the guy who remembered and chronicled all the stuff that happened when everyone else was falling down drunk. And I was the guy who, if you messed with me, would get even with you at the typewriter. My father once said to me, "Nothing bad will ever happen to you, because you'll just write about it and get even." And isn't that what the power of the press is all about? 25 years later, I read the latest novel by Tim Dorsey. Hurricane Punch reminded me of, well, me. As I turned the pages and read about people being barbecued by military meals ready to eat lasagna, or being fried by the world's most powerful guitar amp, I remembered the thrill of brutalizing the people I thought were idiots or who'd done me wrong. Dorsey, who's joining us today, as a former journalist who made it out alive, having worked at the Tampa Tribune from 1987 until 1999. Hurricane Punch, which was published in February 2007, is Dorsey's ninth novel. It's an all-too-funny story about life in the world's emerging media capital, Tampa Bay, during hurricane season. It skewers the media left and right, which made it perfect for discussion here. Tim, welcome to Mr. Media.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And not to make your interview all about me, Tim, but am I the only one who thinks fiction writing is a great place for vengeance?
I think maybe that's the chord that I've struck. It's a lot broader than I think even my publisher or my agent thought. Originally, I guess it was presumed that these would be more of a cult or underground type thing, but... Just if you look at my website, the pictures of my audiences, I mean, they look like the local neighborhood association. So I have a theory about that.
Yeah.
And that is that even more so than your background and mine, I think out there there's this like, kind of untapped reservoir of, this feeling that all the people that obey the rules and are good pillars of the community, there's a growing resentment that the people who are breaking the rules are winning. And so maybe vicariously through Surge and the books, they see these miscreants getting their just desserts.
I was kind of reminded of the Zach Braff character on Scrubs, who is dealing with real life, but he thinks, and you always see what's actually going on in his head and what he'd like to do and how he'd like to deal with the person. And that's pretty much what Surge does. I mean, he just deals with the way he wants to. He doesn't seem to filter things like the rest of us do.
That's the best part of doing this is it's a matter of not censoring your imagination. And I think we all have this sort of stream of consciousness to one degree or another where, as we go through the day, we have this internal dialogue, and it's basically he just is externalizing our collective internal dialogue, I think.
Now,
I don't mean to be so heavy about it, but really, we all have these little voices and these little things going on as we drive around and we curse at people on the highway. And anyway.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I was going to ask you. I mean, it seems like there's a little passive aggressive streak at work with the author here.
Oh, absolutely, and it's kind of funny. I started off, there's a lot of, and I have a great temper, probably as a result of the books, but I was at the beginning, I guess maybe there was a lot of bottled up frustration that ended up, you know, coming out as a Surge's violent streak. And then as I got, you know, as my dreams came true and I got books published and sales started going up and royalties started going up, you know, I became quite happy. And people started complaining that Surge wasn't killing enough people, and they were, you know, criticizing the book, so they pissed me off and I killed more people.
And, you know, a lot of what happens happens on the road in different places. And I got to wondering, if I saw that you have done well over 800 personal appearances for the books over the years. Do you find yourself hatching up ways to kill people and while you're out traveling? I mean,
yes, actually, when I speak to writer groups, I explain that most of my best writing is, and I don't mean to be glib here, but it's done like in the shower or while driving. And what I mean by that is I don't sit down at the computer and think of what I'm going to write. I already pretty much know what I'm going to write by the time I sit down, because I've kind of daydreamed it and, you know, turned it over and visualized it in my head while doing other stuff.
Did you ever think that Surge was going to become, I don't know if an alter ego, because, you know, hopefully you're not quite like that. But, I mean, did you think that you would be living with him 10 years later?
I guess it's like young people, you know, they don't look for the future. You know, if you're 18 or you're 21, you never think of being 25. It's like when I started, you know, I just wanted to get one book published and just be able to hold, you know, a hardcover with my name on it, you know, in my hand, and just... And that would have just been, you know, like winning the lottery. And I really didn't think beyond that. It just took off. And, you know, like I mentioned, I ended up connecting on levels that my publisher and I didn't necessarily expect.
You and I have never met or officially crossed paths, but I was actually at the Tampa Tribune in 86.
And last game in 87.
87, right. And it wasn't hard for me to imagine a couple of things while reading Hurricane Punch. One is, I guess by the time you were writing the book, you were a copy editor by then. You were no longer out working a beat. But I know that room that you were in, and I know what had been going on in the years leading up to that. I mean, you make reference in the novel a lot to convergence, and I can just imagine a copy editor sitting around daydreaming about other things, or you know, am I wrong? Or is this what's going on?
Doing anything but the work I was paid to do. Right?
Exactly. Yes.
It's interesting. As I was working on the very first book, which was Florida Roadkill, the thing is, the way this evolved was, I wasn't going to have violence or crime or anything in the books. I was just going to have satires on Florida, because I felt that, you know, I don't know, I just felt maybe that would be a crutch, but it's been a great crutch. I finally had an epiphany that, you know, basically the crime and all of the news stories that I've covered, either as a reporter or an editor, you know, it's what I know, and I had a large tank of material to tap into, and so I'd be working, and the day the first book got published is when I left the Tribune, but while I was working on that first book, you know, I was writing it at home, but you know, as you know, when you write something, you know, it's constantly, you know, even though you have an outline, it changes as you go along. And each shift at the paper, you know, whatever my imagination might have thought up, you know, quite often reality would trump it. You know, something would come over the AP wire, or the cop reporter would come over and you know, tell me something he just, you know, an arrest report he just picked up. And you know, I would slide open my drawer and get my notepad and make a note for the next chapter.
So you didn't actually write this at work? I'm very disappointed to hear that.
Oh, Hurricane Punch?
Yeah. No, I mean Florida Roadkill. I was really hoping to hear that you wrote it, you know, in between stories at the Trib.
Oh, no. I actually, and I'm not saying this defensively, I really didn't. I took notes of, you know, I would take shorthand notes if I saw a news story come across that I thought I could use. But but no, I did this, and I worked the night desk, so if I, you know, I would think about it at work, but, you know, I would come home and write, you know, late into the night after the night shift or get up early, and, you know, it was one of those sort of med student, you know, residency crucibles that you've got to survive.
Mm.
You know, pulling a double shift like that, but
that's
what you get. You know, nobody has time to write a book. You know, but you just got to do it. You know, while juggling the other job.
Mm. You used up an awful lot of pop culture and Florida news references in this book. I was amazed. It seems like every time I turned a page, it's like, oh right, there's Terry Schiavo, or the, you know. Did you use too many? Were you not? Did you really have enough for the next book?
I'll tell you, I've got a stack of newspapers right next to me here in my office, and you know, it's like a conveyor belt. I never use it up. You know, remember the Lucille Ball episode with the cream pies coming down? It's like you're never going to run out of weird news stories in Florida. You know, there will always, you know, be you can't get enough books out, frankly.
And you must get asked about this a lot. What is it about Florida? I mean, you know, we certainly have this whole Florida fiction genre now, yourself and Hyacin and others. And then there's things like my friend Chuck Shepard, who does the News of the Weird column, is actually, there's so much that happens in Florida on a regular basis, he does a whole separate thing called the F State.
First, as far as the genre, and this goes to another question that people ask, as far as, you know, the what is it with the journalists, you know, so you know, heavily populating that school of writing, and the questions answer itself there, that you know, the ones who just, you know, read the news, you know, especially the stuff, the little stuff in the wires that doesn't necessarily make the paper, all those little tidbits. You know, that's responsible, you know, for the genre, basically the journalists. And then the other part, as far as why it's so odd, I just think it's a combination of the weather and the lack of control of the state. I mean, basically, it's you know, there's a robust you know, business and economy, but nobody's really running things, you know, in the overall sense. You know, it's not, you know, everything's up for grabs. And there's such growth and transiency of population that, you know, people just pass each other, and it's very easy for you know, for somebody who's on the lam or doing no good to sort of, you know, blend in or hide in the cracks.
Oh, and Sir certainly does that. I mean, that's amazing. Did you is the character today? Is he different than the way he started 10 years ago? I mean, you said you didn't plan on all the violence and mayhem that way, but are there other aspects of him that are different, or is he pretty consistent 10 years out?
You know, I think he's probably a lot different, not by plan or anything, but simply, you know, unconsciously, as, you know, if you write over the course, I mean, if I look back, you know, over, you know, a 9-year span of when I was working for, you know, newspapers, and I took, you know, clips that I wrote at the beginning and clips at the end, you know, there's a difference in writing, and I just think just the inevitable, you know, and as I said, you know, unconscious changes in your writing as you're going along will affect, you know, the characters.
Mm. And Hurricane Punch, in particular, is as much about Surge as it is about the media, the Tampa Bay media in particular. Was that aspect of it too easy to write and parody?
The media part?
Yeah, yeah.
yeah, it was. I mean, that was. That's the thing that, as far as this book, that was the most. It was one of the easiest to write, and therefore one of the most fun. And I think that helped the book. I think if it's work and you're not enjoying it, I think that will show up in the final product. But no, this was a blast.
It seemed like Jeff McSwirley, and I love that name, who's the journalist in the book and one of the protagonists. He works for not the Tampa Tribune or the St. Pete Times, but a third Tampa Bay daily. But I mean, it seemed to me that Tampa Bay Today, as it's called in the book, it really reminded me of the Tampa Tribune under Doyle Harville, where, I mean, that's when they were trying, there was that period of, oh, everything's, all the convergence, we're going to do the internet here, and we're going to, we brought the TV station in, and we're going to do news, and am I wrong?
I think timeline-wise, it was a little later.
Okay.
And but no, I mean you're accurate in that it was a it was an industry-wide movement, and mm-hmm. the Tribune was part of it. But the one thing I want to stress by having a fictitious third-party newspaper is that there are places that have taken it to the extreme, and I didn't want to say that it was a Tribune because it's not.
Okay.
But you know my experiences, you know, in the media, you know, got to be there because I mean frankly I mean, I like what I'm. I mean, this is what I intended to do all along, but I really love working at the Tribune, and you know, and all, and I have so many friends there, and they've gotten a kick out of this because, you know, they're all in the media and they've seen, you know, what's happened and stuff like that, and so this is kind of hopefully it's enjoyed on a broad level, but I think journalists in particular. Smile at a lot of the references.
It did seem more to me reflective of the Tribune than in any way really the St. Pete Times, and I just assumed that was mostly because, well, of course you worked at the Tribune and the Trib.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, if I'm going to like describe a newsroom or one of the news meetings or this or that, it's going to be either consciously or subconsciously from, you know, the memories of where I work.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, absolutely. And I don't, and that my knowledge of the Times is much less.
Now, one of the great themes in the book, of course, is media convergence. The idea that McSorley has an unused video camera in his bag at one point comes into play. I wonder if you could spell convergence for me and use it in a sentence appropriate to the book.
Spell convergence?
Yes.
Now I'm trying to think of a joke here. Basically, convergence. I'm sorry. Can we edit that out?
And you want to skip the?
I'm trying to think of a glib line there.
You want to skip the spelling part? The are you smart as a fifth grader part of the interview?
No, I was about one synapse away from a joke, and I couldn't make it in real time there. So.
Is convergence a bad thing, do you think, as you think about it and you look on it?
Not in concept, but it can be in execution. I mean, if it's in concept, it can be great. And I know now we're playing inside baseball with a lot of people who aren't.
Familiar. I know.
But if it's simply used as a cost-cutting measure to get more work out of less people, then it's terrible because in a lot of respects, media tend to be natural monopolies or semi-natural monopolies, and there used to be some. And I know this isn't business, you know, we're it's a capitalist country, you know, which is great. But there used to be a sort of tacit contract with the community that we would fulfill a function of, you know, casting light on politicians and, you know, the powerful elite who would prefer to you know, have their business done, you know, behind doors, and it's not that we're. I guess the fewer people you have, and the less experienced they are in investigative reporting, the more that function doesn't get performed.
Mm.
So that's my concern. I know that sounds very dry. And I'm beating my chest hot, you know, but.
Well, you can only respond to the questions that are thrown at you. hurricanes, of course, play a very big part in the book. And for people who haven't read it yet, the title is Hurricane Punch, and there's a tropical drink on the cover of the hardcover. But I mean, the book is really about a guy who loves the thrill of the hurricanes, and also the media coverage of hurricanes. do you have any good personal hurricane stories? Have you been evacuated, for example?
Absolutely, and as a matter of fact, that's how the book came about.
Oh.
I mean, I was you know, getting ready to write that book, and I was working on the outline of a book that had certain elements, but non-hurricane elements of it. And that was in the 2004 season. Little did I know that 2005 was just around the corner. But what happened was, as I was starting to write the book, I couldn't get it on track because it was we were literally constantly, you know, either evacuating. We have relatives in Vero Beach, and either they were evacuating over here or we were evacuating over there, like constantly, you know, constantly, you know, getting supplies, putting down shutters, putting up shutters, you know, zipping across the state, you know, taking in relatives, you know, it became just a routine lifestyle, and then, you know, during that, I'm a news junkie, so I always have CNN or MSNBC or something on, and during that whole period, I was also bombarded with the surrealness of reporters covering hurricanes. You know, I mean, either they're standing out where nothing is happening and they're trying to make it exciting, or they're brainlessly standing where they should never be. So anyway, it was just how my life was during the writing of that book. Which we were, by the way, we were extremely lucky. I mean, my family dodged a lot of bullets. My in-laws from Vero Beach got clobbered a couple times. They lost electricity for weeks, roof, you know, et cetera. So, you know, over here we did exceptionally well.
Oh yeah, I had a similar experience here in that we were, I think for about 6 weeks, we had a good deal of our stuff packed in the back of a U-Haul trailer. And we're set to go at any minute to leave. And the time we finally were evacuated, I remember we went to Ocala, which is about 90 miles north of here, seemed to be quite safe. And then suddenly the one hurricane was headed towards us there, and my family in Sanford, Florida, my wife's family, invited us and said, well, come here. We're safe here. And we said, no, you know what? It's too late. We're going to stay here. And they got hit. So yeah, the book on that level was just it's so dead on to the experience, both the you know, the way people react and the way you're completely powerless, but also the media coverage of the storms is just it is, and I don't know, and frankly, as being still in the media, I don't know how they would do it any differently, because you got to go and plant yourself at a place and think you're either going to get great footage or nothing's going to happen. But you're still there and you got to report, and you capture that so well. It was one of the things I really loved about the book, is that it's inane, but it's necessary.
Well, what killed me is I think it was from the 2005 series or season where Key West. I guess Key West got brushed. They had massive damage from the storm surge as a storm that really didn't hit them wind-wise, but as it went by, the surge backwashed on them, and they really got hurt. But during a lot of the footage of that, then a couple storms that brushed them, if you know Key West, you know, it's, you can predict this. If there would be, you know, a reporter out there, you know, on live TV, and they would be just like, you know, people walking behind them with drinks, you know, out in the monsoon, and it was just a scream.
All right. Absolutely. You changed the subject just slightly. I mentioned that you have done something like 800 personal appearances. And you've obviously gotten very good at it. If people go to timdorsey.com, your website, they can see that you have hats and T-shirts for Surge and for the books. And I mean, it's become a whole little cottage industry. Do you like the appearances, and how do you make them? How do you make them work so well for you?
It's interesting that the appearances have become. At first, I was. You know, you have to try to sell your name and all that, and now it's just like, you know, meeting with a bunch of friends each place I go, and so you just get together and have fun, and you know how it is when you have your certain group of friends, and basically the people you end up friends with are the ones with similar senses of humor.
Mm.
I mean, just after just spending enough time, you know, each time you get together with some friends, you just start cracking up over stuff. You throw out, you know, and with these books, it kind of brings out people of like minds when it comes to humor. And so we just get together and just, you know, I just have discussions and we end up cracking each other up, and they give me a lot of great material. We had a good time this last tour with a lot of the current news that was going on. But if anything, the readers make it work, because, you know, it's you know, they're already pulling for me, and they want to talk about old Florida and Serge, of course, the people that they love that he's pumped off.
Do you remember the first time someone showed up with the S tattoo?
You know, at least I have had a couple of a couple of people have been Serge tattooed, and they've emailed me their photos. The one I specifically remember was at a book signing where I didn't see the person until the person in front of them had their book signed, and then they stepped, the next person stepped up in line. And if you know the books, you know that it was a guy, and he was dressed in a blue NASA astronaut jumpsuit, and he was carrying a silver briefcase. And, of course, you know, that's Serge. You know, so, that was great. And then I had in Southern Palm Beach County at a Barnes & Noble just on this last tour, I had two women show up. One was Sharon, the stripper from Florida Roadkill, and the other was Molly, the love interest in Torpedo Juice.
Wow.
Yeah. They showed up, and one had like a bag of white powder. And, I mean, it was just crazy.
Now, has there been any interest, or have you optioned any of these yet?
Yeah, we currently have an option. We've optioned Florida Roadkill, which essentially means that they have dibs on the series, because the way it works is if you have a character throughout the books, they have they're entitled to, you know, any of the other books if they want to use material.
Is there any activity on the option?
You know, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the third time we've optioned it, and then you can option it a million times and they don't make it, or just out of the blue one day you hear they're about to go into production. So
right.
I'm so busy with the books, I don't check with them, and I guess they're glad, because I don't know how other authors are, but I'm sure they don't want to be bothered by the guy who wrote the thing. They just want
to. It would seem, you know, in reading, it would seem to make that would make a great series, like on a Showtime or HBO, where they could deal with the themes, as opposed to, you know, I mean, obviously, I'm sure you'd be thrilled to have a movie made, but the material would really lend itself to an adult type of ongoing program, I would thought.
Well, I won't argue with anything they'd like.
I got you. Now, I understand that the paperback edition of Big Bamboo is due out, but any day, or is it out?
It literally just came out. So
okay.
Yes, you're correct.
All right, so we're right on top of that. And you finished the next book, number 10?
Yes.
Does it have a title?
Not in stone. I've got a couple things I'm playing with, but as in the past, if I cast something aside, I might use it two or three books down the road. So,
okay.
No, we don't have a finalized title yet.
And
it's the untitled book number 11. Since we're talking about it.
Oh, is that one number 11?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I guess I got my count wrong. So Hurricane Punch was number 10.
Hurricane Punch. I apologize. I'm on the computer screen in front of me is number 11.
Ah.
That's number 10. Number 10's done, and I'm working on number 11.
Okay, so my count is right.
Your count, you are correct.
Can you tell us anything?
That's what happens when you get, because literally, because of the long lead time, you've got pretty much three going on, you know, constantly. You know, one you're either wrapping up or touring for, one that's, you know, being edited, and the next one you're writing.
It's a good thing to know what you're doing next. Now, is there anything you can tell us about number 10, including when it'll be out, but also, you know, what direction, Serge?
Well, it'll be out next January, and it takes place. There's a lot of other parts of Florida, but it takes place quite a bit in the Tampa Bay area, and it follows Serge and Coleman are back, for those who follow the series, and it's it also reunites, and you don't have to know any previous books, each one should stand alone, but if anybody has read Triggerfish Twist, which was another Tampa Bay book, it picks up with a lot of those characters, reunites them, because I enjoyed that storyline and those characters.
Mm. I know that was always the great thing I loved about the John McDonald books years ago, that, which took place in Florida, that even though the character in the one series was recurring, you could pick up any book and get into it and know what was going on. And I think you're right. I mean, it's the same thing with these books. Any other hint of what's going to happen that you want to tease a little bit? Is there an Evelyn Wood version of...
Let me think here. For those who are familiar with the series, Coleman will finally meet Lenny, and Johnny Vegas, the accidental virgin, is back by popular demand. I actually get—it's funny. I go on the book tour, and I almost feel like an oldies rock act. You know, call out requests. You know, for the next book. You know, which character they want. You know, some of the supporting cast they want back. So those guys are back. The E team is back. The older women. The Davenports are back. So is the Diaz brothers who are running the cheesy Hammerhead Ranch Motel over in Pinellas.
Mm-hmm. So now, what about my new favorite, Mr. McSwirley? Is he is it too soon to bring him back?
I don't want to give anything away, but there, right. I need a character, and I'm not sure which. Either I'm going to make a new character, or I'm going to bring back one of several.
Mm.
And he's in the running, but he might be a dark horse at this point.
And again, without giving anything away, I just want to say I loved the ending on Hurricane Punch. I had a sense of where it might go, but I was completely surprised in the way it wound up. So good job there.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Thanks. Well, Tim, we're just about out of time, so I want to thank you very much for joining us on Mr. Media this week.
Well, I appreciate it very much, too.
And folks, first of all, you can learn more about Tim and his work at timdorsey.com. And if you'd like to keep up with Mr. Media's Friday interviews, you can subscribe to the site via email at www.mrmedia.com. You can also subscribe to the audio feed in the podcast section of iTunes. Thanks for joining us. Please come back next week for another Fridays with Mr. Media.